Welcome back to Stateside. The 2014 Winter Olympics are now in the record books. The Olympic flame has been extinguished. Athletes and reporters are packed up and heading home from Sochi. And that includes NPR's Sonari Glinton, who joins us now from Sochi. Hello, Sonari.
Hey, Cindy. How you doing?
Doing well. You know, Sonari, there were so many less than wonderful reports that came out of Sochi at the beginning of the Olympics, with the unfinished hotel rooms and the suspicious looking yellow water coming out of taps and computers and smartphones reportedly being hacked, all of that. And overlaying that was the threat of terrorists. I'm wondering, how did all of those hashtag Sochi fail tweets square with your actual experience in Sochi?
You know, I think it got a lot more attention because, you know, there were no games, there was no news. So all reporters had to do was grouse, you know? And so that kind of got into the firmament. I mean, there were definitely some problems. But the big things, when you talk to an athlete, when you talk to the coaches about the venues and where they were staying, it was universally praised by the athletes. There was a little problems with snow in the mountains, but the ice was great at all of the arenas. The athletes' lodgings were great. And that's sort of a sign of sort of where the priorities were for Putin and the people in charge of the games. The athletes first, reporters down at the bottom.
Fair enough. You know, we did keep hearing that drumbeat of terrorism threat. And that went on for weeks leading up to the Olympics. Sonari, do you think the media overdid the terrorism stories?
Well, I wonder if, you know, if something had happened, right, we would have, you know, it's better safe than sorry, I think. Our friends to the north did not seem to have this sort of fervor about terrorism. So there were a lot more Canadians who showed up at these games than Americans. So there were the Russians and the Canadians were the two large groups of people. There also weren't a lot of international travelers who ended up coming here. We don't know what the threat assessments were, but I'm very happy that I didn't have to report on anything more than Shawnee Davis or the skaters from Michigan.
I would agree with that. And something else, Sonari, before the games, we heard a lot of criticism, especially from the athletes, about Russia's anti-gay laws with the fines for speaking out on behalf of gay rights or for saying gay relationships are equal to heterosexual relationships in front of minors. I saw one place where an Australian snowboarder declared in a pre-Olympics interview she was going to, quote, rip on President Putin's, shall we say, behind after competing. But then competitions began. Things got real quiet and muted on that front. Why do you think that was?
Because at the end of the day, it seems as if the Olympics are about competition. And at the end of the day, the athletes aren't politicians. They're athletes. One of the few people who consistently spoke out was Ashley Wagner, who is an American ice skater. And she came in the top 10 for the Americans. And she sort of consistently talked about it. But none of the other athletes seemed to, I mean, there are so many things to focus on that they couldn't focus on politics.
That's true, and they had medals to compete for. We're speaking with NPR's Sonari Glinton, who's joining us from Sochi as he gets ready to head home after the Winter Olympics. So let's talk, if we can, about some of the Michigan athletes who made their way to Sochi. There were a lot of them. I'm just wondering, Sonari, whose thrill of victory, agony of defeat stories grabbed you the most?
All right, so for two Michiganders, there is Charlie White and Merrill Davis, who compete or who train in Michigan, and Patrick Chan, who's a Canadian but also trains in the Detroit area, and Jeremy Abbott. Charlie White and Merrill Davis, they won gold in ice dancing. They're an incredible delight to see. So that was really interesting. Patrick Chan, who ended up getting second place, he was sort of favored to get the gold. And then finally, Jeremy Abbott said something that I thought was interesting. He moved to Michigan to change up his training schedule, and he ended up doing pretty poorly. But it's really interesting because he talked a lot about how hard it is to be a figure skater and how much bullying there is. And I just thought that was a really fascinating thing that an athlete showed, you know, his frustration.
When you think about it, I know in ice dancing, it was 15 of the 20 teams train in the Metro Detroit area between Novi at Canton and the Detroit Skate Club in Bloomfield Hills. And I do think a lot of people's hearts were captured by men's figure skater Jeremy Abbott when he did that wipeout and crashed into the wall, lay there for what seemed like forever, and then got up and nailed his routine, even though he was clearly in pain. What was cool to watch, tell me what it was like to be there, was hearing the Russian crowd cheering him on. He said that's what got him up and on, back on his feet.
Yeah, I was sitting with a group of grizzled figure skating reporters, and the reporter next to me said that she had been covering figure skating for more than 24 years, and she hadn't seen a fall quite that bad. And when you were there, I mean, I inhaled. I wasn't that far away from him. You know, he was down at our side of the rink, and I talked to him moments after that, and you could just see the pain. Not the pain of having hurt himself, but the pain of how much he had worked. I mean, he had seen he'd been seeing a sports psychologist because he had done poorly in 2010. He had worked really hard to sort of, you know, as in life and in figure skating, it's not about whether you fall or how you fall, but how do you respond when you get back up. And that was one of the more inspirational moments, because he realized probably then that he wasn't going to win, that he wasn't going to get on the podium, but he had to finish not only for himself, but for his team and for the crowd that was out there. And I was really inspired by him.
Sonari, give us your impressions of the everyday, you know, guy and gal on the street Russians that you were able to encounter.
It's really funny. As you know, but maybe our listeners don't, I'm an African-American man, and there are not a lot of them in Russia. So as I would walk to along the Black Sea, it often would be hard for me, because people would stop and ask me to take my photo.
Oh, really?
Yes. So that was pretty funny. Everyone was kind. It's interesting, because you know, the idea of customer service, the way we think of customer service, hasn't been around that long because of the Soviet era here, and so there's a lot of adjustments to sort of, you know, how to deal with people as customers, even now, you know, 20 years hence. And so 25 years hence. So there was a lot of that going on, which is, you know, really people trying really hard to be open and hospitable. But what was really funny was how you could sense that people wanted people to think well of Russia. Maybe not of the government, but of the Russian people. And, you know, last night at the, you know, all the journalists and a bunch of the Russian volunteers go to a karaoke bar that's near our hotel. And, you know, after weeks of hanging out with these people, you know, their English gets better. And they just say, we hope that you understand a little bit more about Russia, that it's not what, one of the volunteers said to me, we're not all Putin. And I thought that was a really – that's exactly the way I think people encounter me.
NPR's Sonari Glinton checking in from Sochi, Russia. Thanks so much, Sonari.
It's always a pleasure.